for an entire generation, people have experienced Star Wars the only way it's been possible, on the TV screen. But if you've only seen it this way, you haven't seen it at all.
This is the podcast you're looking for.
We've been waiting for you.
Welcome to Coffee with Kenobi. Here are your hosts, Dan Z and Corey Club.
Hello, this is Corey Club, and welcome to show number 10 of Coffee with Kenobi, a new Star Wars podcast that analyzes our favorite saga in a whole new way. With me is my good friend and co-host, Dan Z.
Hello, everybody. We want to thank our listeners for helping us get to 400 likes on Facebook and for continuing to spread the word. Our last show with Craig Dickinson was a huge success, and we are excited that our numbers continually increase. We also want to give a huge thanks to Ed Dalista and Mitch Halleck for their kind words of support and encouragement on IndieCast number 180. You guys are very complimentary, and that means a lot coming from such an amazing show. We have much coming your way in the next year, with great guests, more bloggers, more insights from the listeners, and more intriguing discussions on all things Star Wars. Don't forget to download our book review with Megan from Blog Full of Words, where we discuss Razor's Edge and talk about strong female characters and diversity in the Star Wars universe.
In today's show, we're happy to share a cup of coffee with Becca Benjamin of Geeks Helping Geeks. Becca is here to share her thoughts on the topic for show number 10, Anakin Skywalker. Becca is a huge fan of Anakin with a unique analysis you won't want to miss. We also have our next offering of your espresso shot with the Bearded Trio featuring Rob Wainfar.
We'll also look at news regarding Star Wars finale in the Clone Wars comics, Star Wars coming back to Marvel, discuss Bonnie Peace's EP, and talk about the Inquisitor action figure. We will also introduce our topic for show number 11. And now, let's see what's brewing in the Star Wars universe this week.
Oh, wait, this is interesting.
You found something.
For our first news story, we have to talk about the Clone Wars. It's changing formats a little bit, coming soon. It's looking to change into the comic realm and coming from Dark Horse. Animated series was cut short last spring. As far as Lucasfilm was concerned, they were moving in different directions. Lisa has posted some exclusive news coming from Newsarama. Dan, if you want to explain that a little bit more?
Yeah, this is very breaking news. Just before we sat down to record, I was checking my email, as I often do, and I saw that Lisa, our media specialist, had posted this breaking news from Newsarama. And at first, Newsarama was a little unclear because they made it seem like the end of the Clone Wars was going to be in comic book form. And I started thinking, bonus content, stuff's in the can. Yeah. Kevin Kiner's been recording music. What's going on here? And then they made an update. And to Lisa's credit, she did her due diligence and found through Star Wars Underworld there were many sources from Lucasfilm saying the Darth Maul arc is not serving as the finale for the Clone Wars. It's just pretty much covering his finale. It's going to be a four-issue miniseries called Darth Maul, Son of Dathomir. Star Wars comic writer Jeremy Barlow came out and said, due to Star Wars, the Clone Wars TV show's sudden cancellation, Lucasfilm wasn't able to film the final episode of the series, which is a shame because the story is an important and action-packed chapter in Darth Maul's continuing evolution as envisioned by George Lucas. That's the thing that makes me excited, is that George Lucas had this mapped out in his mind about what's going to happen to Darth Maul. So we're going to see that. I'm a huge comic book fan, as are you. Are you disappointed by this, or how do you feel about this?
I think it's a great avenue to be able to finish out the arc. Darth Maul has always been kind of an enigma for me. I can't quite figure him out. Mm-hmm. And I think it's nice to be able to wrap up and see where this leads to his future.
Well, in the Clone Wars seasons 4 and 5 and Lockdown, it offers some new insights into him, so I'm interested to see how they flesh him out and what they do with him. He is an enigma. He's one of those characters, secondary tier villains, that I've understood the fascination with. I can't always say that about some of the other secondary characters. I don't know if the writer that we just mentioned is going to be the writer for this, or who's going to write this, who's going to draw. We don't really know a lot about it, except that I believe it's coming out in May, is that correct? Or at least coming out this spring, I mean?
Yeah.
May.
You're right.
Yeah, it was May. Okay, good. Apparently, this is the very first time that a comic book about Star Wars is canon, as far as how I know canon to be defined this recording. So that's interesting. When Buffy came out with extended seasons past the TV show run that were canonical and Josh Whedon approved, and they're awesome and you love them, but still tonight, not quite the same as seeing it on TV or on the big screen, but hey, if they say it's canon, hey, I'm sure this is not the last we're going to hear about this, so it's going to be fun to check out.
Well, Dan, this rolls right into our second news topic of our show here, and we got talking about Dark Horse and Star Wars comics. Looks like Marvel has picked up the rights to produce Star Wars comics starting in 2015, just in time for the Episode 7 tie-in titles. So what are your thoughts on that? I mean, I know Marvel originally had the rights to it back when the original trilogy was coming out. A lot of adventures there. I never read any of those comics, and I don't know how well they were received. What do you think?
I read the whole run. I loved it. Even at the end, I was still hanging on, and I didn't want it to be canceled. They sort of started to run out of ideas, but I'm not really sure about that because I haven't done the research. But I'm excited about it because, and this is a foregone conclusion, because we knew that it was going to happen. We knew that Disney owned Marvel, Disney owned Star Wars, so it just made perfect sense that they'd bring everybody together. A lot of people are pretty torn up about it because they've had a loyalty to Dark Horse. Dark Horse has been publishing Star Wars comics for a very long time. A lot of great stories have come out of it, so it's pretty cool. And a lot of people are worried about their digital downloads. They will still be able to download their things digitally from Dark Horse. The interesting thing to me, and I just heard them talking about this on the Full of Sith one-year reunion show, what they've got going on is at 2015, Dark Horse isn't able to publicize or publish Star Wars comics. So if you're a Dark Horse fan or at least remotely curious, I mean, I'm sure they'll be out there in comic book stores and in libraries and who knows what'll be online. But I would basically say, go grab them now.
Yeah, like you said, Dan, Dark Horse is publishing Star Wars comics for over 20 years. That's a long run for anybody, and they've been putting out quality stuff, too. I mean, I know a lot of the issues now are collected in trade paperbacks, and you can pick them up pretty much anywhere. I know I go to my local comic book store, I check them out, and I kind of have my eye on a couple of them that I want to check out. But I think Marvel taking this over... it is kind of bittersweet in a sense. I think Dark Horse has done a good job, but Marvel is kind of a powerhouse and they'll bring a lot of talent to it, a lot of good writers, a lot of good artists. I'm really curious to see what they'll do as far as jumping off Episode 7 and see what they'll do with the characters and mythos and the saga itself.
Yeah, it's big news. If it wasn't for the stuff with the Clone Wars Darth Maul arc finale, this was going to be our lead story because it generated a lot of buzz and a lot of activity. So we're definitely looking forward to seeing what Marvel does with Star Wars. I mean, just think of the idea of Brian Michael Bendis and some of the mega talents at Marvel tackling these Star Wars characters. And I guess by the time we know more about this, we're going to know where the EU is going and how they're going to tie in canon. So, again, more good times and more things to be looking forward to with Star Wars. Our next news story comes from Bonnie Peace, who is Aunt Beru in Episodes 2 and 3. She's just released her first indie album called Bittersweet, four songs on the EP. And Corey, where can everybody find that?
You can find it on iTunes. You can also find our show on iTunes. And you can stream it through SoundCloud if you like. That's your kind of your thing. You can check out the songs before you buy them. I did not see a title called Blue Milk, though.
Well, you know, maybe it's prequel. Since it's a prequel, Aunt Beru, maybe Blue Milk hasn't established quite yet. But in all seriousness, she's got a beautiful voice, plays guitar. It sounds really, really, really nice. I know Joe and a lot of people that have been writing in talking to us about this, they're enjoying it as well. She's getting a lot of buzz and accolades online for it. So we encourage you to check out the link in our show notes.
Our next news topic comes from Star Wars Weekends. Disney has released the dates for 2014. They've just been announced on their official blog. The weekends are, again, traditionally in May of each year, usually. And again, they're in May and beginning part of June. There's four weekends. The first weekend is May 16th through the 18th. Second is May 23rd through 24th. The third is May 30th to June 1st. And the fourth is June 6th to June 8th. Now, I've never been to a weekend. Unfortunately, we're going to Disney in the fall of 2014, so we'll miss out on the weekends as a family, and it's sad.
Are you really?
It saddens me, yeah. Yeah,
I didn't looking know forward that. To that.
Yeah.
That's great. Well, where's my invite?
It's in the mail.
Well, man, they haven't come out with any announcements of what's going to be there, who's going to be there. If they do have the Stormtrooper option again, which we talked about in our very first show, I'm going to be tempted to drive down there just to do that. But I am excited to announce that Aaron Harris, loyal listener who lives very close to Orlando, he's going to be our official Star Wars Weekends correspondent. So we're looking forward to great, exciting things from him covering Star Wars Weekends for us, much like Troy does for us with San Diego Comic-Con. So Star Wars Weekends, be ready to hear a lot more about that as time goes on, because it is a wonderful time. And now let's join Rob Wainford as he pours your espresso shot with the Bearded Trio.
And now your espresso shot with the Bearded Trio.
Hi everyone, this is Rob from TheBeardedTrio.com bringing you all the latest news on Steven Spielberg, George Lucas and John Williams. Well, first up, let's do some Jurassic World news. Now it seems that Twitter is the place to be for getting the latest news on Jurassic World. The director of Jurassic World, Colin Trevorrow, recently tweeted a photograph of the legendary Phil Tippett with the words, "Welcome back, Phil." So it seems the visual effects supervisor who worked with his Go Motion effects on the original Jurassic Park is back in the dino world. Of course, Phil Tippett is famous for saying, "I've just become extinct," after seeing the CGI effect from ILM. Of course, Steven Spielberg used the line in the first Jurassic Park movie.
"So what are you thinking?"
"We're out of a job. Don't you mean extinct?"
Now, it was only a few days after this announcement from Colin Trevorrow that Phil Tippett took to Twitter and kind of confirmed that Industrial Light and Magic will be involved in Jurassic World. Phil Tippett's tweet was, "It's official. Jurassic World is coming and someone's got to supervise those dinosaurs. Looking forward to working with Team ILM 20 years later and 20 years stronger." So he kind of confirmed that ILM will be working on Jurassic World. It's kind of expected, but it's nice to get some kind of confirmation anyway. Well, good news if you live in the United States, because the most excellent documentary, Drew, the Man Behind the Poster, directed by Eric Sharkey, is now available to stream on Netflix. If you've not checked out the documentary yet, then I certainly recommend it. It's essential viewing, profiling everybody's favorite movie poster illustrator, and he's done some greats such as Back to the Future posters, the Indiana Jones posters, Star Wars posters, to name but a few. And there's some great interviews on the documentary as well from the likes of Steven Spielberg and George Lucas, from Harrison Ford, from Steve Guttenberg, to name just a few. And to whet your appetite for the documentary, here's a quick clip from the trailer.
"They say I could draw before I could talk. It's just what I do. It's what I've always loved to do.
It's so tactile, and that's because he paints, he doesn't do keyboard.
He knows every trick on the board.
He has a very distinct line.
I often pose as a unique myself.
I want to be whatever makes you look like that. I want that shit around me.
That abstract texture that's emerging of all those elements.
All those things add up to a feeling.
I just pick those things and make that feeling.
I'm a big fan of this version.
It's beautiful work.
He's one of a kind.
He's an original.
He's amazing. He's part of a movie experience.
You're going to get Bruce Struzan to your poster is almost worth making movies just for that."
Now, the soundtrack to The Book Thief by John Williams has received more nominations, this time a Golden Globe. Now, the Golden Globes will take place on January the 12th. It will be the 71st annual Golden Globe Awards. And The Book Thief will be going up against 12 Years a Slave by Hans Zimmer, All is Lost by Alex Ebert, and Mandela, Long Walk to Freedom. And sticking with The Book Thief, it was recently announced that the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences has unveiled the list of 114 original scores that are eligible for the Best Original Score Oscar. And it comes as no surprise that The Book Thief is one of them. Other notable mentions will be Man of Steel, 12 Years a Slave, Michael Giacchino's Star Trek Into Darkness, and Pacific Rim. Of course, we'll keep you all up to date on the latest news on the Oscars and any other nominations for The Book Thief by John Williams.
What was the last movie you couldn't stop thinking about?
When was the last time you saw a movie you really wanted to watch?
Now you should recognize that voice because that's Harrison Ford. The Star Wars and Indiana Jones star is currently starring in a new ad campaign for Sky Movies over here in the UK. Now, in the advert, there's a tip of the hat to Blade Runner, but there's also a tip of the hat to Indiana Jones. If you go to our site, thebeardedtrio.com, you can watch the full advert over there. Let us know what you think. So that's your espresso shot with The Bearded Trio. Don't forget, you can check us out at thebeardedtrio.com. We're also on Facebook, and we're also on Twitter as well. And before I hand you back to Coffee with Kenobi, I'm going to play you a clip from one of my favourite scenes from a Steven Spielberg-directed movie. Thanks. Until next time, goodbye.
You all know me. Know how I earn a living. I'll catch this bird for you, but it ain't going to be easy. Bad fish. Not like going down the pond chasing bluegills or tommy cats. This shark, swallow you whole. Shaking, tenderizing, down you go. And we gotta do it quick. That'll bring back the tourists. That'll put all your businesses on a paying basis. But it's not gonna be pleasant. I value my neck a lot more than $3,000, Chief. I'll fine him for $3, but I'll catch him and kill him for $10. You gotta make up your minds. You wanna stay alive and ante up? You wanna play it cheap? Be on welfare the whole winter.
Han Solo, Rebel Soldier, Lando Calrissian, and Bespin Guard, each sold separately from Star Wars The Empire Strikes Back Collection, new from Kenner.
Looking? Found someone you have, I would say,
Your lightsabers will make a fine addition to my collection.
Our first item for collector's news has to do with the new upcoming Rebels animated series coming out this year. It has to do with the new character that we were introduced to last year, the Inquisitor figure. A lot of mystery surrounding this guy. We're not too sure who he is. We know that he's been kind of tasked by Darth Vader to do some bad things. But StarWars.com introduced us to the brand new figure and the look and design of what the series will be about or what the series will look like. And to be truthful, I think it looks great. It looks very similar to the Clone Wars, kind of the high cheekbones design, a thin look to him. He's very streamlined. He's got his like little spinner lightsaber going on. Dan, what are your thoughts?
Of course I love it. Of course I'm going to buy it. The sculpt is beautiful. Your description of the physique and the cheekbones is right on the money. It almost looks like he's got German military trousers on. He looks formidable. The high black boots. It's a great looking figure. It's also a good sign of if this prototype is going to be what the line looks like. We're looking at some really serious details. It's a 3 3/4 inch line, part of Hasbro Star Wars Rebels. It is coming out. This figure is going to be on a store shelf in the fall of 2014. Our friend Lisa joked that it'd make a good stocking stuffer, but man. I wouldn't be able to wait that long to get my hands on this thing. It looks awesome.
I think also, too, it reveals some of the direction you're going to go. Like I said, the art and design. And they know they just released the kind of blueprint as far as what the bubble ship will look like. We have that on our website as well. Check that out.
Yeah, the ghost, there's a very detailed image of the ghost that Star Wars' Tumblr website. And by the way, a good chance to plug the fact that Coffee with Kenobi has their own Tumblr account, by the way.
Absolutely, check that out. Yes,
but that's where the image appeared. It's a very detailed one. It looks fantastic. I'm a little more excited about the ghost than I was when we first heard about it after looking at this image.
Yeah, I think it has a little bit of a Millennium Falcon look to it, but also reminds me of the ships from the movie Oblivion with Tom Cruise. The bubble ships they had. Did I call it a bubble ship? I meant to say the ghost ship, but
that's okay.
Yeah, it kind of has that feel, look and feel to it. Kind of the swivel, maybe the swivel top. It looks like you said World War II. Bombing planes had the bubble underneath them, and they would come and shoot down things. So I wonder if that's indirectly into their design as they go along with this.
Well, certainly, I'm sure it's no accident. Very nice. I'm very impressed with your observations, Mr. Graphic Designer. Very good stuff.
I try. That's all I do. I just try.
That's all we ask. Our next collector story is once again, Sideshow begging me to give them my life savings. They've got a Captain Han Solo 6-scale figure from Hoth. Perfect timing with this incredible cold front we've been experiencing. That it's another beautiful sculpt. The pre-order starts Thursday, January 9th. As far as I can tell, there's no price point, although I'm sure it's identical to Luke's. So you can check our show notes for that. I don't know that I'll be investing in this at this time because I'm putting the money into the probe droid. But it looks like Harrison Ford, and if it's anything like the sculpt they used to make the Indiana Jones 6-scale figure that I have, look for an impressive collectible.
We also described the Luke, Hoth Luke, the lad in our last episode. And I think this looks like a very nice companion piece to that. Like you said, it looks great. It looks just like Harrison Ford. Everything looks fantastic. Everything is, I would assume, handmade and just put together precisely to detail the costume as far as they had in the movie and what it looked like. So look forward to more stuff from Sideshow.
Luke, you're going to find that many of the truths we cling to depend greatly on our own point of view.
I must be allowed to speak.
You've taken your first step into a larger world.
Joining us on the topic is Becca Benjamin of Geeks Helping Geeks. Becca is a longtime friend of the show, an old friend of ours in general, and one of our new bloggers here at Coffee with Kenobi. Becca is a lifelong Star Wars fan who is quite fond of Anakin Skywalker, and she is here to share her wisdom with us on the topic for show number 10, Anakin Skywalker. Was his fall to the dark side credible? Hero, villain, or both? How does viewing the Clone Wars change or alter your opinion? Becca has agreed to join Corey and me for a cup of coffee, and we are very excited to have her. Welcome, Becca.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
Well, absolutely. We were just talking before we started taping, and Becca and I have been friends for probably 8 years through Geeks Helping Geeks, which we're going to talk about here real soon. So this is the first time we've ever chatted on the phone or Skype, so pretty exciting stuff.
Yes, it is.
Now, you guys have been friends for 8 years, and I'm just recently joined Geeks Helping Geeks within the last year or so, and it's quite a community that Dan's introduced me to. And could you tell a little bit about your background with Geek Helping Geeks and how that works for you?
Well, basically, it all started, I believe, back with the Star Wars blogs, back when that was up through your hyperspace membership and all that kind of good stuff. Blogging on there, we kind of made our own little pitiful little band, so to speak, and became real good friends, and quite a few of us would travel state to state, hang out with each other as relationships grew. Through that, I believe I was introduced to Geeks Helping Geeks through Deej or Tom and Troy. They asked me to, join and get involved in that, and that was great. I mean, and since then, we've been real close, and it just keeps going on from there. We're kind of like a small little family.
And can you explain to everyone, we talk about the Geeks Helping Geeks a lot. In fact, before I even started the podcast, I reached out to Troy. And Troy, for our listeners, was our San Diego Comic-Con correspondent, one of our future bloggers as well. Deej, Tommy, he's going to hopefully participate more with the show as we go along as well. But can you kind of explain for all of us what Geeks Helping Geeks is, what it was started as was supposed to be as far as collectibles?
Well, from my understanding, how Troy put it was basically this way we can eliminate the middleman. So say you're looking for a specific item, whether it be an action figure or whatever, and you can't find it locally, one of us in another state can, will get it for you, ship it to you without having for you to pay any of those middle fees. You just pay for the item and that's it. You don't have to worry about whether you have to trust if it's going to get to you or with the whole money issue. It was to help out finding things that you couldn't get in your own area. And it worked out well.
Yes, Geeks Helping Geeks has helped me a lot. I think especially it was at its high point with John and everyone when the McQuarrie figures were coming out, when Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull came out. I know our media specialist, Lisa, grabbed for me the Indiana Jones Monopoly set. It came in a wooden crate. It was really, really cool. And I couldn't find that anywhere, but she found that for me. There was a lot of Geeks Helping Geeks exchanges going on. What were some of the big things that you got from some of our friends?
Actually, to be honest with you, I really never had to do any exchanges with anybody. To be honest with you, I'm more of an art collector, so when I go to celebrations, it's pretty bad because they're expensive. But I never really had to exchange anything. I don't remember, having that happen. I remember just more or less posting any finds that I would find, because I got lucky once, and I remember John really liked, I went to a garage sale and I found this C-3PO pen, one of the very first ones that were done, I don't know, probably back in the late 70s, early 80s, mm-hmm. and he still worked. So, and I got it for a buck, you know, so that's one thing that I've never opened, and it's in my case. And, but yeah, no, I never really had to do that, which is fine. I was still a member of the group.
Yeah.
You know, if I found anything for anyone, I would let them know.
Well, another fun thing about it too, that we make comment whenever somebody gets something, they post a brag about what they've gotten, or they post their comments and observations. So it really has become, not has become, it has been for a long time, a really strong community of fandom and support that I've always found the Star Wars family in.
Absolutely. Yeah, we definitely bonded pretty well with that.
I agree. And I think I haven't really ordered anything from anybody else either, but it's just nice to see what people are getting for others in general. I think it's nice to be able to go, if you're not in that state and that person goes to a con that you can't get to, what a great opportunity to be able to find something you're looking for, or keep an eye out that you, because you can't be there.
Oh, absolutely, because that's the one thing I've been able to do, in a sense, not that they were actually asking for it, but certain of our friends sometimes can't make it to the celebrations, whatever, and they can't get certain things. Some of it's art, and I've had the opportunity, and I'm going to say luxury and the privilege of working with Steve Anderson. And doing that, he sends me artist proofs of what he has left. And I have been nice enough, as I say it, because I can't sell them. I would feel guilty, and, you know, I just don't want to make a profit on something that he's done, even though I've kind of sort of a little bit helped. I will give them to people that were looking for them that couldn't go to the celebration, because typically you have to be there to purchase those prints. So I sent one to you, Dan.
You
so,
did. I was just going to brag yes. about you. That was my my first gift to go into my new Star Wars office. So yeah, that is going to have a very proud place of honor. So thank you again for that. That was very, very cool.
Not a problem. Like I said, I was impressed with that one because of the size. Typically, they're not that big. So that one's beautiful. I have that center wall in my living room. So it's a gorgeous piece.
It really is.
Is there a website fans can go to and check out his stuff?
Oh, yeah. Actually, he's got Steve Anderson Design. That's his personal art page. And then he does feature most of his selections on his Facebook page, too, at Steve Anderson.
Excellent.
Facebook Steve Anderson. So, and I believe he's on Twitter, too.
Cool.
Yeah, definitely check them out.
We'll put a link on our show notes so fans can get in touch and they're interested in something like that.
Absolutely.
Awesome.
Well, let's go ahead and get down into our topic. And for as long as I can remember, we put out posts sometimes checking with our Geeks Up and Geeks friends and our other listeners to see what kind of topics they want or what they want to talk about. And Becca may have been the first person to reply, and she said, I want to talk about Anakin Skywalker. So it's perfect. You're on the show list to talk about Anakin. And I want to start by asking you this question. Why is Anakin so maligned in the prequels?
Because basically, let's put it this way, the whole entire story revolves around Anakin / Vader. That is basically what the saga is about. So you got to have them one way or the other. The first six, like Lucas had intended, is about Anakin's story. Course, in the beginning, all we get is Vader not knowing too much about him until the last two. So I believe, you know, you got to have his story and how he fell and how he became the man in the suit.
It's the whole reason the prequels existed. But why do you think that the character of Anakin in the prequels got so much slack? And do you think it's Hayden Christensen? Do you think it's Jake Lloyd? What is it about him that you think has so many people riled up, or used to have people riled up, and how do you feel about that personally?
I don't feel it's the acting. I think he portrayed the part well. I've seen other work he has done. I think he's a fabulous emotional actor. He plays the part well. Anakin is emotionally based, period. 100%. He relies on it. That's what motivates him. Whatever he's feeling, that's basically brings about his actions. You know, that's just who he is. I don't think Jake Lloyd did a bad part either. I mean, you're looking in episode one, he's an innocent little 10-year-old. I mean, let's face it, what harm can a 10-year-old do? He's, you know, doesn't know much other than what he's already seen up to that point, you know, love from his mother. You know, they don't have much material wise, but let's face it, he's loved, very well loved. Him and Shmi have all they need. In a slave life, I guess you can say they have all they need. I think a lot of the slack comes from it probably wasn't what most of the OT fans were looking for. I think they wanted to see more storyline on just Anakin. I compare that to the new book Kenobi. I think a lot of fans were looking for more solely based on Obi-Wan, just like in the prequels, they're looking for more just Anakin. And instead you get a lot more side story. You know, you get Jar Jar and all the other things that people complain about, but you can't, if you look at the original trilogy, it's not just all Luke. It's not just all Leia. It's not just all Vader. It's not just all Han. You have your side stories.
So you're saying, you know, you're saying that maybe he has become sort of the poster boy, much like Jar Jar, as far as what's wrong with the prequels, because he's not Luke?
Probably. I think they were looking for more of the same feel other than what they always said about Luke being whiny, which I don't perceive Luke as whiny or Anakin as whiny. They're both, when you first see Luke, he's a teen.
Yeah, they're adolescents. I mean, how else,
exactly. What do you expect them to act like? I mean, it, especially when you have kids, you understand it more. You know, that's normal. I don't think either one was whiny. I think they're both having their teenage angst in their own period of time, in their own era, you know? So to be honest with you, I think a lot of, hate to say it, a lot of men have slack over the, or not slack, but give Anakin or Hayden a lot of angst, I guess, if you want to use that word again, is because, one, he's good looking. I think that was a big thing. He does play a poster boy in that look, but so did Mark Hamill.
Reverse, you know, sexism. I mean,
yeah, absolutely. You know, but it's more than that. You know, I mean, it's hard to say. I don't have a problem with Jake Lloyd or with Hayden in the way they portrayed the character. I think they did exactly what Lucas wanted.
I think particularly when you say, and I didn't know I've said this on a previous show, but Jake Lloyd, I was a little on the fence with, maybe so more so anti-Jake Lloyd than pro. But then having a son of my own that was the same age as Jake when we went to see episode one in 3D in the theaters, and the things that Jake Lloyd did in his mannerisms, the way he reacted to emotional things, I thought, oh my gosh, this is how a little kid that age acts. I completely see your point. I don't know about Corey, but I think for me with Anakin, I love Anakin, and the Clone Wars is a big reason for that, which we'll hit in a moment. But I think he's a stronger character as far as his on-screen presence in episode 3 than in episode 2, but he's also allowed to be more, I like what you said, pure emotions. Like his fuel, his adrenaline is emotion, which is, of course, paradoxical to the Jedi Order and the Jedi way. So that is a big reason why he's maligned. And is it Anakin's fault that he and Padme have such stilted, challenging romantic dialogue in episode 2? I mean, I'm sure we saw on Spike TV over the last weekend the big marathon, the six films marathon. And I was watching clips of episode 2, especially at the end, and when they reveal their love for each other, I thought, gosh, that's so awesome. It's so beautiful. This is why Luke and Leia are going to be born. But oh my gosh, is it cheesy.
Yeah, I think a lot of it has to do with maybe the script that was written at the time of the prequels. Maybe it was just rushing it. I don't know. We don't know. I think as far as my thoughts go, as Anakin and Jake Lloyd and Hayden Christensen, yeah, I agree with you, Dan. Having kids of my own and see how they act and react to things is pretty dead on. I mean, I think also it has to do with his acting ability. He was a young kid. It was more of a growing process for him as an actor, I think.
You mean Jake Lloyd?
I'm sorry. Yeah, Jake Lloyd. That's,
okay.
Yeah.
No, you didn't. I'm pretty sure that was what you meant.
Yeah, Jake Lloyd. I think he has a lot thrust on him. I think any actor would in that role because everybody wants to see that kind of take off and see what Vader's going to do, because that's what's it all about. Like you just said, Becca, is the emotions is all about that, and the saga is all about Anakin himself. And then we move on to Hayden Christensen in the second and third film. And in the second film, like you said, the dialogue is cheesy, and it's just almost like nobody could really do it justice as far as a love story goes. And I think it was difficult even for the actors to read those scripts and go, oh man, I gotta say what now? Something about sand being coarse and stuff like that. So I think it's a learning curve for an actor to, again, have that weight on their shoulders, but yet, you know, come to terms to what the emotions are driven in that particular scene or in that particular event that's going on in that the character's life. And like you said, Dan, it moves into the third part almost perfectly. And then by the third film, the end of the film, third film, we love Hayden Christensen and what he's been doing as far as the character. We're like, well, we can't think of anybody else who would be in that role.
I've always said he does angry well, and he's very, very good with a lightsaber. Yes. And those are two very important things for Anakin Skywalker, who I still think is the most complex character in the entire Star Wars saga.
Yes. So I guess talking about Anakin from the prequels, we'll move into the Clone Wars and how that character was impacted through that. Now, I personally have not got through the whole series yet. I'm still working on it.
What season are you on, by the way?
I'm still
just to keep our listeners updated.
Yes, they can berate me, yes. I'm still in season 4.
You're in season 4?
Yeah.
Last time we talked, you were at the end of season 2.
Yeah, we've watched a couple more with the kids, so we just started season 4.
Oh, it's great.
Right on Christmas.
Are you loving it?
Oh, it's great. It's wonderful. And like I said, you get to know Anakin more. You get to know kind of his training, his upbringing, and you're like, oh, man, this character's great. He's what's well done. It's well written. I think the team there doing that show did a wonderful job of, again, we talked about scripts, talked about dialogue. It does a lot for the character itself. And again, I want to speak real quick on the prequels, the time limit versus the Clone Wars time limit. Prequels time limit was 2 hours, if that. You know, you have so much to pack into one story and people discover this character. Now with the Clone Wars, to just expand on that character as well. Our last show was the order of watching the films. And I think to really get the whole essence of Anakin's younger years, you need to watch the prequels and then move into the Clone Wars just as the evolution of the character goes. But I'm curious what you guys think and how the Clone Wars impacted Anakin as a character in your mind.
To be honest with you, I was thankful they did the Clone Wars. Mm-hmm. And not at first. When I first saw the film, I was not too gung-ho on it, to be honest with you. I didn't like it. I wasn't even fond of Ahsoka, but let me tell you, I fell in love with her. She's awesome. You know, mm-hmm. There's just something about her. But with Anakin, I loved it because you got to see exactly why he's the hero with no fear. You got to see that because that's skipped over in the prequels. You don't get to actually see all that he's done. You get to see a little more of his background, his character, the fact that not only is he emotional, he's something else that most Jedi are not. He's loyal to the ones that mean the most to him. He will not leave a man behind. There's no man down when it comes to Anakin around. So you get to see this buildup of what typically the Jedi would probably consider a flaw, but yet it's very human. You think about it. I mean, you're out there. If one of your friends were down, would you leave him there? Of course not. You're going to pick him up. You're going to carry him. But most of them are like, no, do your duty. That's not Anakin. You know, if there's someone out there, he's going to be there for him. Typically, like I said, watching the Clone Wars, I'm so glad that it's out there. I'm very upset that it's gone. But moving forward, going to Rebels, you know, you got to move on just like everything else. You know, can't stop change. But to me, my fandom of Anakin just grew from the Clone Wars.
So powerfully, beautifully said, especially in the idea of him having no fear and his loyalty. And we had a whole show, of course, on attachments when we first started out. But the fact that if you are one of the clone troopers or one of the other Jedi, even though the Jedi may not say it out loud all the time, that's who you want having your back and fighting with you in the trenches and taking on everything the Jedi take on in the Clone Wars. Anakin is loyal. And obviously he's loyal to a fault. Anything in extremes can be dangerous, no matter what the emotion. But he's the kind of guy that is someone that you want with you. And I don't know why I didn't really quite think of it that way. Corey, what do you think?
I agree, and I was kind of thinking about that a little bit as Beck was talking. If you get to know somebody for long, you know, you go to work and you work with your coworkers, and you get to know them basically on a daily basis. And now, I mean, you're talking about war, just like brothers in arms. Mm-hmm. There's such a bond there, I think, as far as the characters go. And like you said, you have the person's back. You're risking your life to save them, but yet you're, you know, hoping that they do the same. I got to thinking too. It's like, I wonder, maybe this is totally off topic, and tell me if I'm wrong on this, but after Order 66, I wonder if that impacted, in a sense, too, Anakin's rage or Anakin's thoughts. You know, he knew all those clone troopers coming out of that, and for them to mow that, well, I don't know. That doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
No, it does.
No, it does.
I agree. I mean, you have to imagine how much he already had to deal with, and then that on top of it, it explains a lot of his, you know, cold exterior now, not just the suit itself, but the interior, the exterior. I mean, he's everything he's already known and everything that he cared about. It's not just Padme. It's everything else is gone.
Dan, any thoughts?
I've always sort of thought, and I'm sure Becca's read a lot more EU than I have, but I've always kind of was under the impression that during Order 66 and his fall from grace into Darth Vader, I very much look at that as temporary insanity, because I don't think at any point he was really thinking clearly about what he was doing. It was just pure rage and emotion and violence. You know, it's no different than when you're a kid and your brother and you get in a fight over something dumb and you start hitting each other or doing something silly. And then 10 minutes later, you know, your parents reprimand you or you feel bad and then you move on. But he was just in that blind rage, and it changed everything in him. And that kind of leads me to, we need to talk about Anakin's turn. One of the most malign things about episode 3 and Anakin, and I got to be honest, when I thought of this topic and we talked about this topic, I kind of thought of it mostly through episode 3, but is Anakin's turn believable or not? That's something that's been very much scrutinized.
I think it's believable. Absolutely.
Why do you say that? Because a lot of people will say he just sort of cutting off Mace Windu's hand and he's yelling and all of a sudden he's ready to kill little kids. He's ready to kill younglings at the drop of a hat. At least that's the main criticism I've heard.
Well, I don't, like you said, or I mean, it was Corey, one of you guys said, I don't think he's actually thinking things through. It's everything's happening so quickly. It's spiraling. It's just happening. He's going with emotions. Only thing on his mind is saving Padme. Period. He doesn't want her to die. He's risking everything, putting it all on the line to save her. To me, he's kind of put everything on the back burner and kind of tuning it almost out. But if you watch closely through the whole, everything that he does from the moment he, actually, there's a proper name for the mark of contact that he does on Mace. And I wrote it down. I can't pronounce it correctly because I know I can. It's a different language. It's theirs. It's in the Jedi Path book. I'm going to pronounce it as Chomai, Chomai. Basically, it's
actually, I had that for dinner tonight.
Sounds good, right? It's supposed to be a merciful conclusion to a battle, meaning he disweaponed him. He disarmed him. It should be over. Anakin won. I don't think he realized Palpatine was going to take it to the next level. Do you know what I'm saying?
Huh.
I think he
I
think he was trying to just disarm him so he can keep Palpatine alive, period. End the battle. He won. Now let's move along.
But couldn't he have just, since he's so powerful, couldn't he have just taken his lightsaber from him instead of literally disarming him?
Possibly, but let's.
That's a very strong, you're talking about a very strong metaphor. Just symbolically removing someone's hands, their tool, their instrument, it's not taking away their voice, but it's leaving them handicapped. And I know many have pointed to the fact that Mace has been played quite a bit, especially in the Clone Wars, and especially from episode 1 on, that he's always been a little bit mindful and watchful, or maybe perhaps even wary of Anakin. Is there some animosity that's kind of built in there, or is that even – I kind of think that Anakin's so strong and powerful that he may be annoyed with some of the things that Mace had done or said, but no more so than anything else in the galaxy per se. I don't think Mace or anyone was really on his radar. I think being a Jedi, his loyalty to Obi-Wan and his love of Padme were the things that fuel him.
Oh, I agree. But getting on to that whole, the possible animosity towards Mace, it probably has been there, you know, underneath it all since day one. I mean, look at the anger on Anakin's face. Let's face it. The boy is at 10 years old, leaves his mother. Qui-Gon promises him a better life. Yes, it'll be hard as a Jedi, but, you know, goes with him. And they appear before the council, and basically they're treating him like he's on trial for something he's done wrong. When he left everything he knew behind, and he's being ridiculed for loving his mother, for missing his mother. He's 10 years old. You know, and they're not looking at that. They're treating him like he's any other Padawan that's been with them since there were probably two, is usually, I think, when they bring them over, you know, since they're like toddlers. But I think there's always been there, and he knows that Mace doesn't trust him, never has. I mean, even right there, right before he does that deed there with the whole severing the hand, Mace tells him, you know, if what you told us is true, then you have earned my trust. So he hasn't even trusted him yet all these years.
Right. Yeah. It's taken a long although I sometimes when I see that, I think it's like sort of a teeter totter. Sometimes he trusts him, sometimes he doesn't. And it kind of started to go away. And they said, wait, you can get the trust back if you do this.
Right. And but getting back to the point, I don't think it was something he really thought through. It was a quick action. It solved the problem at that particular moment. I think that's all he was thinking of, was saving one so he can save the life that meant the most to him.
And so then you are actually the perfect person to have on for this. And we all have children, and we all love our children more than anything. No matter how much he loves his wife, the killing the younglings is premeditated. Now, we've got a lot of emails about that notion. In fact, Chad, one of our loyal listeners and friends of the show, he's gone so far as to say he doesn't really like Anakin because he kills the younglings. That's a hard one to defend.
It is. If you're asking me if I was in his shoes, would I? I'm going to have to go with no.
But
then again,
right.
I'm a woman. I'm a mother. I've carried the baby within me, and then, you know, bring them forth. It's a different, not putting anything against fathers, but it's a different emotion there.
Oh, we agree. We agree with you.
There's a more connection, but again, we're talking of something that's, it's a movie. We're going to go with that. But, if you look at the way it's shown in the film, Anakin has tears from that moment on, from the moment he severs Mace Windu's hand. Every action he does, there are tears in his eyes. Even as he overlooks Mustafar after taking out Newt Gunray, which you know he's wanted to do.
And the fans did too, by the way.
Right. That's why I personally think he was saved for last. But anyway. even then he has tears rolling down his eyes. He knows what he's doing isn't the right thing, but to him it's justified if it saves his wife and child. And you got to remember too, he's young. He's what, 23, 24. Mm-hmm. He's not someone like us who are, you know, I mean, we've lived through a lot more. Then again, I do have to admit his life is probably a lot more difficult than ours will ever be.
I would say.
So, again, you got to look at that, too.
I've never had to face a Zillow beast.
No. Or a Nesta Gundarks.
That's
or
right.
Or any of that. You
That's
know?
Right.
So, but, so getting to that, you're looking at something that we can't really compare ourselves to or relate to because we're not living it. I don't believe anyone has, obviously. But getting to the storyline, it's something I think in almost all aspects is not relatable. It's basically there to show you everything, kind of like selling your soul to the devil.
That's
what
exactly
will you
what
do?
It is. Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what he does. You know, he's promised something in return and he's lied to, you know, and he doesn't learn that until it's too late.
And then he's all in. And then later he tries to kill or to strangle his wife, who he's fighting to save, who's pregnant. So, I mean, again, I love Anakin too, but I think this is why he wears a black suit. And I think I've always kind of had the impression that he maybe could have fought free of the Emperor earlier or done different things to change his fate, but he's just sort of continually punishing himself. The amount of self-loathing that he has, I mean, medically, I don't know that much could be done to help him, you know, save him. He gets tortured. He's constantly being burned all the time. It's like he's punishing himself all the time for what he's done. And that's kind of covered in the quote unquote sequel to Darth Vader. What's that book?
The Dark Lord?
Yeah, The Dark Lord. It's sort of covered in The Dark Lord, I would think.
Yep. Oh, yeah. It is covered in there. He goes through a lot of emotions in there because he's also, like I said, again, whether or not it's even canon at this point anymore, there is actually dialogue in there where he wishes he would have been left on the beaches to die.
Yeah.
You know, he didn't, you know, because there's no victory in basically with how they look now and, you know, all that he has suffered physically and emotionally, what's left.
Right. So. Nothing is left. And as far as canon, it stands fine unless the movies or the TV shows trump it. So I guess we can say that there is something to that we can kind of gravitate towards as far as that goes. Corey, what do you think about all this? You have four kids.
Yeah.
What do you think about all this? I mean, I know it is just a movie, obviously. We all know that. But the pathos, the emotion that comes from it, it's got to come from somewhere. There's a lot mythologically going on behind the scene.
Well, I thought about it this way, and I don't want to go too dark on our listeners, but you said, Dan, a little while back, you said he's insane. He's crazy. I mean,
Temporarily. Anyway.
I think it's temporarily, yes. But, I mean, think about school shootings mm-hmm. where kids are – they're innocent and they're gunned down atrociously by someone who's evil, obviously. And it kind of makes me think about this in the Younglings. He was doing that, but what was he getting from that? What he wants at the end is to save Padme. But my question is this too, a little bit for both of you guys. He says, you can't save your wife, but she wasn't in any peril. She was pregnant with her child. Mm-hmm. They were in love, yes, under the radar type thing. But I think that could have played out easier than falling to the dark side and going a very dark route to be able to save her from what, though? There was no peril for her in that situation, that time. There was nothing. Eventually, yes, she's going to die. Eventually, everybody has to die. But mm-hmm. then again, we talk about the Sith not wanting to die and go on forever and live eternally.
Yeah, they fight the natural order of things.
Right. So I wonder if that. Them. Right. So I wonder if that was playing in the back of his mind, like, yeah, I don't want Padme to die, but I don't want to die as well. So it's more of a selfish, selfish regard. But I think too, it's like in that moment of time, like you saw where he chops off Mace Windu's hands, is that period? Does he think, okay, I have to do this because eventually she's going to die someday, so I better do it now? And what do you guys think as far as that goes? As far as him being in that state of there was no real great peril for Padme.
Well, actually. And Becca, feel free to jump in here, but I wanted to jump into some of our emails because Craig Dickinson starts to address that.
Are sure, you okay go, with me? No, go jump in go right ahead.
And Craig writes, regarding Anakin Skywalker, I believe that he is by far the most interesting of all the Star Wars characters. Although Lucas seems to have created him with the express purpose of becoming Darth Vader, he doesn't start off as evil. And perhaps the most brilliant and jarring for some move of the prequels, George Lucas gave us a sweet, innocent little boy, seemingly incapable of greed. And when it came time for his turn to the dark side and Revenge of the Sith, it wasn't out of anger or malice, it was because of love. A twisted, possessive love that consumed him and caused him to reject the strict dogmatic Jedi teachings of that era. And then Craig goes on later to say, as for the original trilogy, Vader is seemingly one-dimensional when we first meet him. He's a bad guy in black, uncomplicated, until his true identity and relationship to Luke is revealed. Luke defies expectation once again as a character often described as one of the greatest movie villains of all time. Revealed does not only be capable of redemption, but also at the mercy of someone much more evil, the Emperor Palpatine. It is this disclosure that aligns perfectly with the Anakin we see in the prequel trilogy, and unfortunately, a source of frustration for many fans who are more comfortable with Darth Vader being simply evil. Much of the love for the OT comes from an appreciation of the clear distinction between good and evil, while the prequel trilogy's muddling of the two often causes consternation. But I do think the muddling was always there, personified by Darth Vader. That's why Darth Vader is the most interesting character in Star Wars, and my favorite as well. So it veers off a little bit from Anakin, and we know they are the same person, although I guess you could argue that as well. But again, it comes down to love. But he says it comes down to a twisted, possessive love. And I would argue that love isn't about possession. In fact, that's straight from St. Paul, I suppose, isn't it? But again, Anakin's love, and I'm using air quotes here, is misguided and leads to some bad things.
Yeah, I agree, Dan. I think, like we talked about, you would do anything for your child or your wife or spouse or whoever it may be. You would jump in from a bus for them, if it came down to it. And I think Craig's onto something here. I've thought about it that way as far as his passion is as far as his love is just focused totally on her. And it's so personified that he has to do this evil deed.
I do agree to some point. Absolutely. I do feel sure. that his love for her was the way it's portrayed. Obviously, George Lucas has his own way of writing. It is a little odd. It's possessive in a sense. It really is.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's shown to be a flaw too. So he's certainly.
It is. But let's be honest. I mean, unlike the other, his other fellow Padawans at the time when he first falls in love with Padme, when he first meets her, he's fascinated with her. You know, first of all, he's 10 years old. He thinks, you know, he's probably never seen anyone remotely like her, you know, as to the whole angel discussion that he has with her. Then when he leaves his mother, she's the only female in his life at that point. So he gravitates towards that because she's nurturing. And at the same time as she's nurturing him, he's got this little crush on her, you know, has to say bye to her when he's going off to be trained. You know, he wants to make sure that his name is in her mind, that it's planted there, you know. And that's a 10-year-old. Surprising. But, you know, I see that even with my own son. He's 11 and he's got a crush on his cousin who's 21. So, well, you know, he wants to be with Molly. So I see that, you know. I mean, when they're like that, I mean, it's a different type of fascination. It is normal.
Yeah.
So, and like I said, he's already planting his name with her, even though it is her who he's saying bye to, but he thinks it's the queen, which he doesn't, you know, at that time he doesn't know who Padme really is. But anyway, and then fast forward 10 years, you know, he's looking at her in a whole new look because now he's a man, a young man, but a man. And obviously he doesn't want no one else to basically claim what he has his sights set on. Going forward into their conversations that I believe that were deleted scenes, he was happy that she remained to serve because obviously that gives her less time for personal affairs. So, you know, again, it's obsessiveness. I see it, but at the same time, I truly do feel that he did love her.
I do too.
Yeah. You know, and I do feel that she loved him. It was just the whole, it's the whole Romeo and Juliet thing. They're not allowed to have that relationship because the Jedi say so, period, which thank goodness for Luke because he changes all that. Again, it goes back to what will you do? How far will you go? At what cost? And he puts it all on the line. He thinks she's more important than the younglings, apparently, you know, and like you said, maybe he was on the insane thing. Cause I think I did a blog on Star Wars where turning to Sith was almost like him, starting his, drug addiction. Once you start, you can't stop.
Absolutely.
And that's basically what's up is now down. What was down is now up. Your whole life changes. What is going, you know, what's most important? And what was most important was feeding that need. You know, he had to keep getting more power to, from what he was told, he needed more power. And the only way he was going to get that power to save her was every bad deed. You know, they got worse and worse. But he felt it was basically an even trade, as sad as that sounds. But it is what it is. And we knew it was going to happen even going into the movie. So we knew he had to fall somehow.
Well, and you mentioned Romeo and Juliet, which I've read more times than I could possibly explain. But there's an excellent quote by the friar, and he says, "These violent delights have violent ends, like fire and powder, which, as they kiss, consume." So it's an excellent extended metaphor of the more passionate your love, the more intense it can consume you. In the metaphor in Shakespeare, leads to fire, and of course we know what happens to Anakin Skywalker on Mustafar, and George Lucas is a very intelligent man, so I'm sure he's well aware of that metaphor of the fire, the passion, and of course the fire can burn and purify you, but it has the opposite effect on him. Well, I want to jump into Chad Lauterbaugh's email, and he was the one who was probably the most outspoken about the perils of Anakin. He says, "I just wanted you to hear it because I think the perils of Anakin and the other villains are an insight not many people can see. My wife and I were talking about it this morning, that we thought after watching all six movies that all the good Anakin does through the movies is null and void because of the senseless slaughter of women and children. We both agree that in Jedi, when Vader saves Luke, we are both more happy that Vader got his comeuppance as opposed to being thankful that he is redeemed. This is just my opinion, but I feel an alternate buildup to his turn even back as far as Attack of the Clones would have been better. Maybe an extreme viewpoint, but I'm sure if more people thought about it, they might feel the same. My biggest concern was that the plot points for Anakin's character were practically spelled out in the OT, but only marginally applied throughout the prequel trilogy. Lucas himself said that they had to fill the Phantom Menace and Attack of the Clones, with stuff because they had too much time and they had to rush Revenge of the Sith because they ran out of time. Now, as a side note, I never heard that, but I'm not saying that isn't true. To me, this created a no-win situation, and in the end, the Vader character suffers. Since he is the main point of the saga, more time should have been spent in making him relatable so that he could be redeemable. People make bad choices and act accordingly to their value set and perception, but in the end, if you can relate that you can accept the choices, rationalize it. Does this make any sense? I've had a few too many cappuccinos. This is thank you, Chad, for that. It does make sense. And I know we've talked about this a lot already, and I know Becca is our resident Anakin apologist here, but it is, and he even says that he doesn't even feel satisfied that Vader's redeemed so much as that he gets his comeuppance because of what he did to his wife and the children. Now, this is certainly a very important point. If you believe in redemption in any way, shape, or form, it's clearly probably the most heinous thing that could possibly happen. What Anakin does, he's a bad guy. He suffers for how much time between episode 3 and the end of Return of the Jedi? He suffers for a long time. His body is burned off. He loses a lot of his limbs. He loses everyone that he loves and is led to believe that he killed them, which in essence he sort of did in a way. But if you believe at all in redemption and forgiveness, then it has to be there. And again, if I could bring it up scripturally too, St. Paul was a murderer. He killed Christians all the time. And then he redeemed to become one of the most powerful and most famous prophets. And he did a lot of good. And you could easily say that by Anakin tossing Palpatine down the shaft in Return of the Jedi, is it a spoiler at this point? he did a lot of good. How many lives were saved because of that act?
Exactly.
And do you think also that if Vader knew this, you know, was trying to redeem himself, having, you know, battled Luke in Empire, that he was just waiting for the right moment, you know?
That's a very Sith thing, though. Isn't there always scheming to take over their master? I mean, that's
true, but
it's still as old as time.
Sure, but I mean, like, so he's going to convince Luke to join the Sith Order and come to his side, and so we can take out the Emperor ourselves and reign. Maybe not reign in such a bad way. Maybe in a better way. We'll never know. But maybe that was his path to goodness, or in his mind.
Lot to think about.
Yeah,
there's a lot, because you got to remember too, there's a lot of in between novels, in between each of the movies. There's a lot of deleted scenes that we didn't see.
True.
I mean, he said the same thing to Luke that he says to Padme. Together, we can rule the galaxy, make things the way we want them to be. There's a deleted scene in episode 3, which I wish they did not take out. It's a very, to me, it's an important scene. I know it's more political, but it's a scene where the Loyalist Committee comes before Palpatine. Anakin stands guard, and they're basically giving him the petition for the delegates of 2000, which is basically the early birth of the rebels, of the rebellion. On that petition, I don't know if you guys have read the novelization of episode 3.
Oh, it's literature.
Right.
It really is. And I do not use the term lightly, but it's tremendous.
I mean, it's hinted in there. It's hinted in a couple other books that lead up to episode 3 that the next move was to present a possible chancellorship with Padme. Anakin obviously knows that. So how do we not know when he's saying that to her, he's thinking she's going to go with it because she can rule. He can be her iron fist. I mean, make things the way we want them to be. It fits perfectly with that deleted scene. Obviously, it also fits good with their conversation back in episode 2 with the dictatorship comments, you know. Then again, with Luke, he feels he has the upper hand because this is his flesh and blood. You know, obviously he would rule with his son versus Luke going off with the Emperor. You know, you're talking to very high midichlorian count force users, you know, I mean, you got the chosen one and his son. So, you know, it's very touchy if he had it all planned out or if it was just that moment that it just came out.
I think he's Darth Vader. He's Sith all the way through the original trilogy until the moment when he sees Luke getting shot with Sith lightning, and he's looking back and forth and looking back and forth, and he finally canonically says no, and he kills the Emperor. That's when he becomes Anakin. Up until that point, I don't think he ever thought, hey, I might kind of love my son. Maybe I will save him. No, he lets him get tortured for a while, and he stands there and watches it, which is still cringing for me, even though I've seen it a million times, even though I know exactly what's going to happen. So he's still very much – I mean, the evil is rooted extremely deeply back down into his soul. And finally, love wins out, which is one of the prevailing messages of Star Wars that I love so much.
I don't know if I fully agree that Anakin wasn't bubbling to the surface as of episode 5. I think there was little hints.
I agree. There were hints. There were hints, especially at the end.
There was definitely conflict there with himself of who he was, you know, what he was going to do in regards to Luke. I think he was trying to hide how he felt, even most importantly from Palpatine. I mean, there were certain moments there where even Palpatine was questioning what was going on.
But don't you think that was purely from a power standpoint, not a father-son standpoint? He wasn't thinking, I better save Luke so we can play catch. He was thinking, I need to capture this guy and encase him in carbonite so I can thaw him and train him to kill the Emperor.
Oh, definitely. But I think as episode 6 rolls on, feelings start to change, especially that moment on the bridge. You know, when Luke is finally taken away to go see the Emperor, he stands behind and he's contemplating. Everything's going through his mind. I mean, I believe the past starts flashing back. He starts thinking, you know, of everything. It's all coming back. And I think the pain is there, which he's been trying to hide for, what, 30 years almost?
At least.
You know, so that's why he doesn't set foot on certain places. Number one being his home planet, and of course, Padme's. He won't go near them. It's too painful. So, again, I think, you know, he's faced with having to face himself once again, that face in the mirror. I mean, Luke is basically his old self. It's all in front of him again. And, you know, Luke says it. He basically wipes the slate clean of who his father is when he stands ground and says, I am a Jedi, like my father beat before me. He's basically wiping away any Sith slate. He's not Vader. This is Anakin, reinforcing it and mocking out the Emperor with that one. You know, everything that you've done hasn't ruined him fully. You haven't done it. And that's why I think, you know, the Emperor slashes back at him as harshly as he does to Luke. Because he mocked him right in front of his, you know, his apprentice and everything by throwing that in his face and being able to not make Luke bend the way he made Anakin bend. He didn't have enough on Luke emotionally to make him bend. He had enough on Anakin.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, that, I can say very well said, Becca.
Well, I'm just going to turn off my mic and just let Becca do the rest of the show. She's doing a really good job. She really is. I want to jump into our last email from Wayne Barnes. And Wayne and I have been chatting back and forth, and Wayne sent me another thesis, and it's great. It's great. I've taken some of the highlights with his express permission. So I'm going to just read to you a little bit of what he says. I think it's a good way to wrap up our discussion and put our closing thoughts in. He says, in regards to the topic for show number 10, I for one have to say that I feel Anakin's fall was very credible from a story standpoint, but I'd say it was perhaps more dependent upon the audience's ability to fill in the gaps than many may like. It feels as if Lucas is inviting us to go against the grain when examining Anakin's choices, but I will be one to argue that that is the point of the entire prequel trilogy. After all, the films did not unfold as many fans may have hoped. They expected more of the same, but instead we jump back 30 years to a very different time. Like someone at Woodstock being teleported into 40 suburbia, same world, different time. We were forced to re-examine what we understood Star Wars to be, very much as we were examining how Darth Vader came to existence. And he has a couple of main points here which I'm going to jump to. He says, first one, we are predisposed to think of the Jedi as the good guys, which they are for sure, but they're far from perfect or infallible. I try to examine from Anakin's perspective. Sure, they took him in, but parentally, perhaps, they were a source of inconsistency from day one. Qui-Gon wanted him trained. Nobody else did. Even Obi-Wan wasn't exactly on board. They're all against him initially, which will place his loyalty more to Qui-Gon than to the Jedi Order, and for the next 13 years, he's trained by them with trepidation and being held seemingly in check by Mace Windu. Mace never fully trusted him. In Phantom Menace, he says, the boy is not to be trained. In Clones, stay there, we'll take care of it. And in Sith, stay here, if you're right, then you will have earned my trust. Ouch. Flash to the pivotal moment. He didn't intend to kill Mace Windu, just to stop him. He could just have easily beheaded or bisected him. He didn't. He cut his hand off, the very same thing he'd do to his very son about 18 years later. Palpatine's shot put him out the window. Then pretend you're Anakin. Once he stopped Mace from executing Palpatine, he then saw what Palpatine was capable of. He was a little in shock, and let's be honest, for the first time in his life, probably a little bit in awe. Think of the power he just witnessed. And he's put himself in a compromising position, but now the guy's still supporting him. The guy who's telling him everything is okay and that he's done well. The guy who understood why he killed the Tusken Raiders and told him how it was justifiable. The guy that's going to help save him, his wife, from certain death, and also just so happens to be in control of the entire galaxy and commanding the entire Republic military. The point is, he panicked, made a choice that had dire consequences beyond what he could have initially comprehended. Wow, you know, all I got to say for that is, wow. Excellent. And it hits a lot of the points that Becca and Corey and I have talked about already. But the idea with Mace and what happened with Mace puts him in shock. And I really like how Wayne talks about the idea that Anakin might actually be in awe for the first time and a little overwhelmed by a guy who was very much a father figure and a mentor to him.
Yeah, I like what he said, too, about cutting off Mace Windu's hands. And just like you said, Becca, was more of like a, you know, I've won type thing. And to relate that back to what he does to Luke, it kind of puts things in perspective a little bit, too, kind of a shutting him down type thing. But well said. Well done.
Well, and he closes out at the end. He talks about he didn't see a way out, but he knew that Palpatine would support him, even if his wife wouldn't. He's guilty of cold-blooded murder and betraying all that he stands for. So his paranoid suspicions, even from his wife and his best friend, are blinded because the dark side, dark, and I never thought about this until just now for some reason, but the dark side, talk about clouding everything, but he literally can't see in front of him. He even has to wear a mask that he needs to be able to see, a dark black mask, to try to see his new warped perception of the world and how he tries to make sense in it.
It's a new way of saying rosy goggles, isn't it?
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's exactly what it, you know, that's how I see it. Because, he made some great points with the whole Palpatine relationship. The whole time, it's funny because Anakin says it to Obi-Wan when he's going through in episode 3 what his new mission is going to be by telling them everything that the Chancellor does. He said it. He goes, ever since I arrived here, he has befriended me. And he has. He has never once, you know, put him up on a pedestal and then knocked him down the way the Jedi have. The Jedi have, you know, never, you know, most of them never trusted him. They've lied to him. And Palpatine never has up until that point, promising Padme's life to be saved and doesn't deliver. You know, so you gotta remember, this is a man that's done nothing but be honest with him from day one, while the other ones, his family, so to speak, have not. So where would you go? Who would you trust?
Exactly.
You know, you got to look at it that way.
It's a psychologically complex phenomenon with no, it really is, with no easy answers.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
When you're talking about it, trust me, when you're talking about a literary sense of looking at things and characterization, Anakin has always been the most appealing to me because his motivations are they're clear, but they're also muddled, and how he responds to them for 30 plus years are incredibly intriguing. And why, you know, years and years after the fact, ever since 1977, we're still talking about this, because there's some interesting things there to dissect.
Oh, absolutely. There's a lot, like you said, that's one reason why I love the Star Wars blogs. There is always stuff to, you know, talk about, and you could go on forever. There was no end to it. Well, they put an end to it, but we could have went on for a lot longer than time allowed. Definitely.
You bet. And that is a wonderful segue before we close our discussion on Anakin to reintroduce you as one of our new bloggers on Coffee with Kenobi. And can you kind of give our listeners and our readers a sense of what they can expect from Becca Benjamin on Coffee with Kenobi in the future?
A lot of debatable discussion. We'll put it that way. I really haven't outlined it all yet. I'm just still working on it. I actually recruited my cousin, Scott Braytek. He's a artist in Atlanta, Georgia. He's working on my little logo for me.
Yes.
Very nice of him. So a little plug out to him.
Excellent.
So, you know, it's like I said, I really haven't got everything put together yet. I'm still working on it, but I will have it ready. When I'm supposed to have it ready, it'll be ready.
We have complete faith in you. We've given you the keys to the kingdom. We have total faith in you. Just make sure you turn off all the lights in the Jedi Temple when you're done, of course.
lock up when you're done.
But yeah, of course, we are so excited that you're a part of the Coffee with Kenobi family.
Thanks, guys. I'm honored. Seriously.
Absolutely. Wrapping up real quickly before we get to our five questions, any last minute things you want to say about Anakin Skywalker, any of you?
I'll go ahead and start real fast. And what I think, we talked about all this discussion has to do with his decisions and the choices he makes. And we can relate to them so easily because we're human ourselves. I think we can relate to that because maybe those are some of the decisions we would make. Maybe not the evil ones, but just looking out for those we love and those we want to protect. That's the foremost thing in our mind, I think. And when it comes down to it and that choice has to be made, we would have to make the hard choice, I think. Doing good, of course, to be able to protect those that we love. And I think that Anakin, in the long run, that's what his goal is, to protect the ones he loves. And he does that. He brings balance to the Force. And in the end, shows that love conquers all, truthfully. And that's what he wanted to do. I think, honestly, that's what he wanted to do in the prequels with Padme, is love conquers all and just rule by love. And he was warped by the Emperor to do evil. And I think, like I said, that's the whole thing we talk about is redemption and love. And it's played out perfectly through his character in the films, in the books, in the comics, in every aspect. I think they have done such a wonderful job of telling his story.
I agree. I mean, Anakin, I look at him as more of a lost soul. You know, he loses his way. I mean, he starts off with all the right intentions, you know, to do what he needs to do. I think, he had a lot of weight on his shoulders, a lot of pressure. I mean, they're telling him he's this chosen one and he's going to do this and he's going to do that and he's going to bring balance and, you know, he's going to solve everyone's problems for the galaxy. I mean, that's a lot of weight to carry around. I think, you know, through it all, he gets lost, feels that love in general just abandons him. But I think seeing, as we say, or as Dan said in episode 6 with the, you know, at the end with the lightning, he realizes that with Luke, it did not abandon him. It's been there all along. You know, it's just took too long for it to show its face, so to speak, you know, and he grips it with both arms, you know, and basically, in a sense, the circle is finished with him in that way, the way he dies. It's very replicated into the way Shmi died in his arms. I think he finally understands his mother's words, you know, and like his mom, you know, he was happy just to look on his son with his own eyes and see him grown up just the way his mother did with him, you know? And I think it, you know, sometimes you got to learn the hard way, and Anakin's that proof, you know?
Yeah. The very hard way.
I love Anakin. The Clone Wars completely fleshed him out for me. I've always thought that his fall is believable as long as you connect a few dots in your brain. And I can understand why a lot of people find fault with that. I usually like deep characterization where you have to think and analyze, but the facts are there for you to portray. If you just take it on the merits of the films alone, which is pretty much all we can canonically look at before the Clone Wars came out, I suppose it could be a little bit cleaner. However, I think George Lucas is so smart with his metaphor and in his in-depth passion and study of mythology that he knows exactly what he's doing. It's the love, the misguided love. The way he was raised, losing everyone that was ever important to him, his mother, Padme, his friends, thinking that Obi-Wan has betrayed him, that it leads to a fleshed-out character. There's much more to. I still, of course, it's the whole thing with killing the younglings and what he does to his wife. To me, that doesn't make him less worthy of redemption. What that makes him is more tragic. A true Shakespearean tragic hero has a gigantic fall from grace. He's a very powerful, well-loved person in his culture and his time, a person of high prestige. But when he has that one tragic flaw that leads to his downfall that can be avoided, which is why your heart aches and bleeds for him. Becca, of course, brought up Romeo and Juliet before. These characters have these flaws and these tragic passions that lead to their fiery demise. Which is why we're still fascinated about Anakin. I have a feeling this is not the last time we will be talking about Anakin. It's certainly not the last time we're going to have Becca on to discuss Star Wars with us, if that's okay with you, Becca.
Well, that'd be great. Thanks, guys.
Absolutely. So before we let you go, we have our five questions that I know you've heard at the end of each interview, and I'll go ahead and let Corey ask the first one.
Sure. What's your favorite Star Wars movie?
Oh, okay. That's a hard one. I knew you guys were going to ask me this too. For me, it's a toss-up, and I can't choose in between the two. I'm stuck in between 3 and 4.
I guess well, I was going to say. No, that's fine. No, I was going to say.
Hey, we're all about the gray. Life is gray. Critical thinking involves a lot of gray, so that's great.
Unless you're a Jedi. They're black and white. There is no gray. Yeah.
Exactly. Right. Who is your favorite character?
Anakin. Like you didn't know.
What? Are you serious? No.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Oh, spoiler alert again.
So your favorite line of dialogue or film moment?
I have a film moment more than dialogue. My favorite moment is episode 3 because it's stuck in my head because when I first saw it in the theater, that was the moment I couldn't stop. So the moment when Padme looks out her window and Anakin is looking out the council chamber's window and they have that connection, that point speaks volumes to me. And I cried from that point on to the very end of the film. And my brother turned to me and said, "There's no crying in Star Wars." And I couldn't stop. So from that moment, yeah, that tears me apart every time I see it.
If you collect, what is your favorite collectible that you own?
Oh, I collect a lot of different things. I don't have as near as much as most of you guys. I have an interesting piece, I call it. I have a figure. The back card of it is Han Solo. The figure is a Death Star trooper. It's a mistake, and I had to buy it. I got it for $1.
Oh, that's cool. Where'd you get that at?
I got it probably about 6 years ago at KB Toy Store. And I don't think we have any more in our area. I think KB has been closed and done with. But yeah, I brought it up to the girl at the counter. I'm like, "This is not right." And she's looking at me. She's like, "What do you mean?" I'm like, "Look at the back card. Look at the figure. They're not the same." I go, "How much can I have it for?" She goes, "For $1? I said, "Sure." That is probably my most prized piece because you don't see that very often.
Yeah.
A mix up. So yeah.
Interesting.
It's pretty cool.
Okay. So your final question, what particular messages or themes about Star Wars saga resonate or speak to you?
Redemption. Absolutely. That, like Dan said, love conquers all. I mean, if you look at all six that we have now, it's a love story. Whether you look at it in between romantic love or family love, love conquers all. You have your love between husband and wife, and then you have father and son. There's nothing better. No matter what, your family will love you no matter what you do. And Luke proves that.
Well said. Wow.
Very well said. Very well said. Well, Becca, where can fans reach out and interact with you and ask you more questions about Anakin or anything else they were wondering about through your discussions of Star Wars?
Reach out to me on Twitter. I believe I'm at Your Angel B on Twitter there. And I'm also on Facebook. You guys can look me up there under my name, Becca Benjamin. So, yeah, Becca B at Coffee with Kenobi.
Perfect. Perfect. Well, I'm sure you're going to have a lot of listeners that want to chat and interact with you. So, Becca, we can't thank you enough for your flexibility with scheduling and your patience with microphones and all kinds of things that we had going on. As Corey said, welcome to the wonder and joy of podcasting. Thank you so much for adding your insights and your passions, and we look forward to hearing from you in the future.
Oh, you're welcome. I enjoy it. Like I said, this is all new to me. I've never even listened to podcasts or anything. So when you guys first started, you know, plugging it out there, I'm like, oh, I'm going to listen and check this out. I enjoy this because it's very much like being on the Star Wars blogs because you get to still have the commentary, only it's live. You know what I'm saying?
Oh,
it's
yeah.
very similar. Huh. And if your email gets the chance to be read, it's kind of like you had that week, that blog of the week. You know how they used to do that?
Yeah.
So it's very similar.
Yeah.
Thank you for saying that.
Because like I said, there's a lot of us that were bloggers. We miss that part of our life. And you know we do.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because you're there. You know, there's so much, as you said, you can go on forever. There's always something to talk about when it's Star Wars related. Thanks, guys. It was great. I appreciate it.
Thanks so much for your insight and all your analytical perspectives. I think we had a great job. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
And God bless and have a nice evening.
Thanks,
you too,
Becca.
Guys.
Bye.
Thanks.
Bye.
Our topic for show number 11 is the psychology of villains in the Star Wars universe. Why are we intrigued by them? What motivates them? And what does it say about our culture that we are fascinated by them? What particular villains are the most intriguing? Joining us on this topic is Dr. Andrea Letamendi, a clinical psychologist from UnderTheMaskOnline.com and co-host of the podcast The Arkham Sessions, which analyzes Batman the Animated Series. Here's a quick trailer for the show.
Hi, my name is Dr. Andrea Letamendi, clinical psychologist.
And I'm Brian Ward, nerd. And we want to invite you to listen to our new podcast, The Arkham Sessions.
It's a podcast dedicated to the fun
and geeky
analysis of Batman the Animated Series, episode by episode.
We pay tribute to the writers and the stories of the animated series,
while also exploring the very real psychology behind Gotham's rogues.
And maybe even its heroes. All of this and more
each week
on the Arkham Sessions
at UnderTheMaskOnline.com.
Send in your emails, MP3s, and comments, and we'll feature them on the next show. And we're really happy to have Dr. Letamendi on because we heard her on Full of Sith before analyzing Vader and Star Wars. And if you're at all a Batman fan in any way, shape, or form, and I don't know about you, but I would probably rate the animated series as even above the Clone Wars as far as maybe the best cartoon of all time, best animated show of all time. So to have her on our show analyzing things from a critical perspective is going to be really exciting.
And fans who don't think that has anything to do with Star Wars, might I remind you that Mark Hamill himself did the voice of Joker for many, many years on this series and is probably the top person in my mind that does one of the best Jokers out there today. I think that it's excellent. And I'm sure we'll get to talking about that, Andrea, and looking forward to talking with her about this. And definitely write in with your comments. Love to hear from our fans about maybe your favorite villain or why they're intriguing to you. It's always good to be bad, so check it out.
Fantastic.
I like the sound of that.
Echo 3 to Echo 7. Ono, buddy, you read me?
I saw part of the message.
I seem to have found it.
Our first email comes from Alan McEachern, a loyal listener of our show. He says, "Hey guys, another great show. My opinion of Luke and the Force. Luke was never formally trained as a young boy to use the Force, all the teaching of the Jedi. He only spent time with Yoda and didn't really have Jedi Master to teach him for years. He would not have learned properly the disciplines of a Jedi. Again, my opinion. My take on the order of the movies, I think in chronological order, to say start with 4, 5, and 6, because that's how GL intended it. Well, I don't think he had the story of 1, 2, and 3 at the time, so now that we do have them, I think he intends us to watch them in order. And that's, of course, if you don't think too deep about them and just watch the saga as it is. Keep up the great work." Well, thanks, Alan. We had some great discussion in our last episode with Craig Dickinson about the order, and we got some deep discussions. And I think it comes down to maybe your personal preference and how you enjoy the movies and how you remember them or how you experience them for the first time. Definitely George Lucas had a lot in mind, I think, going in. He had a plan, and we're just now kind of seeing it come to fruition with all the extra pieces putting in place as far as the Clone Wars and the new Rebel series and moving on to Episode 7. So very good. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Alan. Our next email comes from Megan Galloway, who writes, "Listen to your last podcast. It was good. Of course, I have to respond to comments about how you read into fans' omissions. What is your guy's definition of stronger Jedi? Also, Luke to me isn't Jesus in what he and Leia were tempted to become like their father. The road to hell is slippery, and each choice for practicality reasons of immediate solutions could make the next unforgivable, unethical step seem justified. Saying, oh, he's just young in the Force and is confused, that is what Obi-Wan and Yoda stated was the worst time and exact point Jedi Padawans fall prey and wouldn't make the right choice. Luke wanted it all to end, save his dying friend, and nearly fell by killing Darth Vader in that instance. Might make it all better and earlier just attacking to kill the Emperor. Seeing his dad's hand, he realized his dad had probably gone to his point of nearly killing a weakened, vulnerable opponent, and then chose to join the dark side, meaning Dooku. Luke grimacing, driving back, and making killing blows didn't seem all high minded Buddhist savior doing good and holy Jedi things, or gee, he knows the right thing, he's just confused. Let me stop. Maybe I'm too old and cynical. I find it more uplifting to see my hero in internal constant struggle and make the righteous choice than be, I always knew that, never crossed my mind. That's for Superman. And then she talks about her Leia theory, and I'm going to paraphrase a little bit here. She says that she felt Leia was using the Force in regards to this is from her last, you know, from last show, talking about the death of Jabba. She says, I felt Leia using the Force was due to a well-known Star Wars idea of Force-sensitive and daughters of a high midichlorian savior, Anakin. And that makes sense to me, actually. That's, I like that. At the end, she gives a shout-out to Craig and says, and yes, it is cool so many younger generations through Star Wars are getting into the philosophical geek stuff. Those of us from Lucas's time putting out the first movie were already pretty versed in, i.e. George Campbell's book. I think it's cool your guest is teaching some deeper core ideas to young elementary kids. Cheers. Peace out. Thanks for airing my letter. It can be hard to read out loud sometimes. Well, that's again from Megan. And Megan, thank you. I really am intrigued by the idea of force sensitivity. I'm not sure if George Lucas was thinking that at the time. It is hard to say. Anytime he wants to come on the show, we'd be happy to ask him. But I think that makes sense to me based on what we know and what's been established through the Clone Wars and through the films. Certainly the EU lends itself to that.
I think what she talks about, Luke being young in the Force, too, and she's right where she says, you know, that's where the time is where you make those mistakes. From my mind, I think that's where he made the mistake in going and facing Vader and Empire and getting beaten. He wasn't ready to take him on. And I think...
Well, she talks about the thing about driving back and making killing blows and seem high-minded
from Jedi
savior. Yeah. And that's true. I mean, he's the thing, the difference between him and a Sith Lord, and I know that Megan agrees with us, is that Luke is a Jedi. Luke is fallible. Luke does make mistakes. He is human. You're supposed to deny your attachments and emotions. But at that point, he had a hard time doing that because he was in probably the most intense emotional moment of his life. So that makes sense to me, and I think she's right on with what we're trying to say.
So she asked the question, what's your guy's definition of a stronger Jedi?
I think Qui-Gon Jinn was, I don't know if he was on his way to being the strongest, but I mean, I think you'd be hard-pressed to find a Jedi stronger than Obi-Wan or Luke. Qui-Gon knew who he was. He was able to balance his emotions, but embrace and experience them, much like Luke learned to do by Return of the Jedi. So to me, a strong Jedi, it's about power, but it's also about using that power and balancing that power with emotion and intelligence and allowing yourself to be fully human. It's the Sith that don't want to be human and don't want to die and not allow the natural order of things, whereas a true Jedi will embrace that. To me, that's the real strength.
I think, too, I mean, you mentioned Qui-Gon Jinn and Obi-Wan being strong Jedi. Luke, obviously, and Anakin the most, I think. But, you know, you think of Yoda and other species, too. I mean, Yoda was pretty strong in the Force. Now, the definition of strength, is it a physical strength? Is it a mental strength? Is it a spiritual strength? I don't know. We don't know the backgrounds of some of the characters, obviously. But I think it's a combination of everything. It's not necessarily one or the other. It's a combination of all those things put together, and that builds you as a character. And as we've seen with Anakin, his strength was his passion, his love. That was his strongest part of him, and that ruled out his darkest heart. So maybe having a strength like that is a good thing or a bad thing. I don't know. It's led to believe what we want to believe, and I think each fan has the right to kind of take it how they want to. And I think definitely Megan has some great comments here, and thanks for your email.
Absolutely. We love hearing from Megan, and we love being challenged, and when you discuss critically and look at things from a certain intellectual perspective or from just an intelligent perspective, it's important to challenge your preconceived notions and the true gift of discussion with our friends like we do here on Coffee with Kenobi brings new insights and new ways to examine things, and we love that.
Our next email comes from a Laura listener again, Melinda Wolf.
And feature blogger.
Oh, of course. Yeah, of course. She says, number nine. Sorry for the Beatles reference, Corey and Dan, but I couldn't help but using the song Revolution number nine, the White Album from 1968. I'm not a huge Beatles fan. Dan, I think you are, but it was before my time.
I love the Beatles. I love the White Album, and that's a very long song, a very random song. It's not even a song really so much as a cacophony of noise, but I love that she put that. But anyway.
She goes on to say, this is in reference to our most recent podcast. She says, I'm married to a Beatles enthusiast, to put it mildly. and I couldn't help but pick up a few tidbits here and there over the 30-plus years her husband Tom and she have been married. And she goes on to say she absolutely loved podcast number 9. Outstanding show. The show keeps getting better and better. There's a myriad of content to keep the show fresh from beginning to end. I found the topic in which order to watch the saga quite interesting. Well, I definitely prefer my order of watching the 6 films unless we're having an all-day marathon. The OT first, then the PT. I definitely can see the merit in the musings mentioned on the podcast. To watch A New Hope, Empire Strikes Back, and then go back and watch the prequel trilogy and finish with Return of the Jedi. Never considered that. I can see how that can be a fun way to view the entire saga. Definitely would put a deeper spin on Return of the Jedi, favor of the 6 films. To see the deeper correlation between Luke's and Anakin's and Darth Vader's path to becoming a Jedi / Sith Lord. There are, of course, so many similarities. I don't have to tell you that. I know, but I am. Watching the movies in the way you suggested on show number 9 certainly would point out the glaring differences between father and son. Maybe when I have some free time, I'll try the proposed way. Well, maybe in the next lifetime. Melinda Wolf. Well, thanks, Melinda, and we definitely did mention your way of watching it. And again, it does come down to kind of your personal preference on how to watch them. Everybody's got a different way of doing it, and I love hearing about different possibilities to look at the saga through the films and just different orders to watch them. And of course, just love the saga and love watching the shows all over again.
We've had a lot of great feedback. We've seen that every show seems to get stronger and stronger with the feedback and the emotion, the responses we're getting. So we're completely thrilled with that beyond belief. Ever since we recorded that show with Craig and reading Melinda's email and other emails, people have commented about the show. I find myself thinking constantly about what's the best way to show it to my wife? What's the best way to show it to the kids? And just how that's going to continually evolve and how is the sequel trilogy going to affect that, which I know we talked about with Craig as well. But it's so cool that there's just so many different ways of examining this story. Can you think of anything else where plausible to change the order around of something that you love mythologically and it still makes sense in its own context?
That's a good question. I can't think of anything off the top of my head. But yeah, I think that's why the saga is it is what it is. And this was such received so well because everybody can pick up one of the movies and watch it and have a relationship with it. And we've talked, there's many fans and many just different writers and speakers on their show. And I think they all have different, we always ask our 5 questions and we say, what's your favorite film? And they all seem to be different, all have their own reasons for that reason. And I think that's wonderful to hear that because it resonates with us so deeply. And I think that's a wonderful thing.
Our last email for today's show is from Kenny Crowley Jr. from Ohio. He says, hello, Coffee with Kenobi. I just watched the documentary Drew, the man behind the poster, and it's great. One of the things I like about the Star Wars films and the Indiana Jones films is the poster designs by Drew Struzan for the Star Wars Trilogy Special Edition and the prequels. His poster designs are amazing. Today, when it comes to movie poster art for any film, too many of them are photoshopped on a computer. Photoshop movie poster artwork, not a fan of it. Hand-painted and hand-drawn poster artwork is better. It's sad that the movie industry is going down that route in the advertising of a film for the photoshopped artwork. What made Drew an original and one of the best poster artists is his posters were hand-painted and hand-drawn and not done on the computer with the pixels. I hope you guys talk about this on the show one day, maybe in a special podcast. Take care, Dan Z and Corey, and may the Force be with you, always. Sincerely, faithful Coffee with Kenobi listener Kenny Crowley Jr. Well, thanks, Kenny. When I read this, I loved it, and it goes in perfectly with our latest espresso shot with the Bearded Trio with Rob Roynfer, where he played the trailer for us to listen to. And I agree with you. Drew's a legend, and there's just something real about, and that's one of the reasons why the prequels were sometimes maligned, when it's really taken with verisimilitude, when you're taking art and sketching it and drawing it and designing it, it just has more character and more soul to it. Do you remember when you saw the Polar Express for the first time or any time and those creepy kids show up with their weird freaky eyes? I mean, clearly computer animation has advanced a long way, but I agree with him. Photoshop's on a computer, it just doesn't work the way that Drew brought our Star Wars, Indiana Jones characters, Harry Potter. The list goes on and on to life. Be sure you check out that documentary.
For me, Drew Struzan is one of the legends of movie poster business. Sadly, he doesn't do a whole lot recently. That's too bad. But I know growing up when I was a kid, I remember my dad had the print of Last Crusade in his office, studio office, and I remember just glossing over that, and just every little detail is fantastic. And nowadays, movie posters are photoshopped because it's quick, it's cheap, and they can do it quickly. And that's the where I was going to go. It's just the way it's you want the simple snapshot of who's in the movie, what's it about, and that's all you need to know, because our world is just so fast-paced, and now we're all on our phones and looking at different things. And as, coming from an artist's background, I think it's sad to see that go down the drain. And when you do see a poster that's hand-drawn, it catches your eye, and you're like, oh, this is different, because it is different. We don't see that nowadays. I think the route we're going and heading is going to be like, you know, some 3D poster down the road is going to be jumping out at us and have some giant head of, you know, I don't know, some actor coming out trying to eat us and, you know, in our faces. And look at the whole industry itself, even with trailers and stuff. And I think that it's so quick, fill that void, and we have only a minute or a second to dwell on this. So I think that's the route it's going to go. It's a great topic to talk about. I'd like to talk more about it, so maybe we'll have Kenny on and talk some more, and Dan can just sit and sip his coffee.
Well, you are really the perfect person to ask about this, because you're such a talented artist in your own right. Just look at our logo and all the other things that Corey's done. My gosh, the guy designs book covers. So
with Photoshop, but that's okay.
But it's still creative, and it looks real. You remember the Avengers movie poster is cool, but or how about the end when they're all looking at Loki and they're all like, not photoshopped in, but they're CGI'd in to be on the same set together. It just seems more real when it's done in Drew's style. So, very good.
If you'd like to respond to our question of our show, have a comment, or just want to say hello, send us an email or MP3 at feedback@coffeewithtoby.com. Or if you'd have a specific question or a comment for either of us individually, email us at danz@coffeewithtoby.com. Or CoreyC@coffeewithkenobi.com. Or visit us at coffeewithkenobi.com contact us section. Or comment on one of our stories featured on the site. If you enjoy the show, please write a review in iTunes. You can also like our show at Facebook at facebook.com/coffeewithkenobi, as well as keep up to date on our Twitter feed at twitter.com/coffeewithkenobi. You can also find us on Tumblr at coffeewithkenobi.tumblr.com. If you enjoy the jazz music, download the album Eye to Eye by Steve Torok on iTunes.
Give the evacuation code signal.
That's it for show number 10 of Coffee with Kenobi. A big thank you to Becca Benjamin for having a cup of coffee with us and for discussing Anakin Skywalker. Be sure to contact Becca at BeccaB@coffeewithkenobi.com and share your thoughts with her.
Thanks to Rob from the Bearded Trio and to everyone who contributed to our show, and all of you out there who listen to our show and email Coffee with Kenobi. Don't forget to send us your comments and opinions on the show topic for show number 11, The Psychology of Villains in the Star Wars Universe. This is the podcast you're looking for.
This podcast is not endorsed by the Walt Disney Company or Lucasfilm Limited and is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. The official Star Wars website can be found at www.starwars.com. Star Wars, all names and sounds, and any other Star Wars-related items are registered trademarks and or copyrights of Disney or their respective trademark and copyright holders. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Coffee with Kenobi, unless otherwise indicated.
There's no one here. Move along.